Brian Lehrer on WNYC. At the Aspen Ideas Festival last week, I got to ask a question of Eric Schmidt, the CEO of Google. We're going to play our full exchange to begin this hour and have a conversation about it with two guests, one who wrote a book called What Would Google Do? And the other who has a blog called The Googleization of Everything. So you get a sense just from those titles where each of them are coming from. And so here's our exchange, which begins with my question. I will warn you that though the Aspen Ideas Festival is a very well-run event, they can't seem to find a decent microphone for audience questions. But most of this clip is Eric Schmidt's answer. But it does begin with me.
Hi, Brian Lehrer from WNYC Radio in New York. Eric, I use Google all day, every day, like a lot of people in this room. But is there ever a point at which Google becomes so big that it's kind of scary and needs to be regulated as a public utility? We kind of reached that with Microsoft in the 90s, some of the same discussion. When you're aggregating all the contents of books, when Google News is the place that people go for news content instead of the sites, New York Times and everything else that you're aggregating, and you know some traditional media are upset with you for that. Literally, is there a point where you need to be regulated as a public utility? And if you can, please address the news content question in particular.
You'll be surprised that my answer is no. And I would offer as a scenario, would you prefer to have the government running innovative companies, or would you rather have the private sector running it? And there are models, and there are countries where, in fact, the government does try to do that, and I think the American model works better.
But, Eric, if I could jump in, I would expect a more sophisticated answer from you, because as we saw with the banks, it's not a question of Soviet-style communism or free market capitalism. The banks needed smart regulation that they didn't have, as I think you were just saying. Is it possible that information is in the same boat?
Well, again, my answer would be no. And perhaps I should expand on my answer. Google plays an important role in information. And the reason you're asking that question is because information is important to all of us. We run Google based on a set of values and principles, and we work very, very hard to make sure people know what they are. So, for example, for you as an end user, if you become dissatisfied with you, we'll make it easy for you to switch to a competitor or another choice. In fact, we have a group which is called the Data Liberation Front, which works for us, which basically works very hard to make sure that there are no ways in which we trap data. So there's a long list of things like that. And companies are defined by the values that they were founded with and that they operate with today. And so if you're concerned about the need for regulation of Google's role, part of my answer would be that the company is not independent of my leadership and the founder's leadership and so forth. The company is formed in a certain way. A thing that you should be worried about is that a combination of special interests plus unintended regulation could, in fact, prevent the kind of consumer benefits that we push so very hard to do. And part of the other pushback I would offer is that the things that we do are available to others. There's nothing particularly secret in the sense that we've just invented stuff, but we haven't largely prevented people from doing their own thing. It's pretty easy for people to try other things. I'd like to see some other folks trying to lay out an agenda for innovation. With respect to the news question, which I think is what you're really, really talking about, there's a couple of comments. The internet arrived, and as it arrives, it displaces industries in really profound ways. It changed, and it's not necessarily the player's fault. It's really about how consumers behave. In the case of news content, news readers, that is the customer, if you will, are busy reading news online. We have not yet figured out the perfect ad model for that. But one of the things that's happening is it's affecting, for example, the newspaper economics, along with the loss of classifieds, cost of print, et cetera. I don't know how to solve the generic newspaper problems, and we've talked a lot about this to them because it's a shared interest. It's from my perspective, a huge tragedy that we would lose investigative reporting in our country which has driven so much of what we really know and really driven transparency in lots of fundamental ways, both in the U.S. and globally. We're working on a whole bunch of products in that area to try to do it. There is a tension here because the newspapers give us access to their content, and then they complain that we don't pay them out of our other businesses. When we've tried that, there's not enough revenue that we can yet get from their content, and so we would essentially be subsidizing them. That's roughly the answer.
And that was Eric Schmidt, the CEO of Google, at the Aspen Ideas Festival last week. Let's talk about the issues raised there. When one private company seems to own most of our information infrastructure now, with Jeff Jarvis, author of the book, What Would Google Do?, and Siva Vaidyanathan, who writes a blog called The Googleization of Everything, How One Company is Disrupting Culture, Commerce, and Community, and Why We Should Worry. He has a forthcoming book along those lines as well. Jeff teaches at the CUNY Graduate School of Journalism. Siva teaches at the University of Virginia. And welcome back to both of you. Good morning.
Hey, Brian. How are you?
Hey, Brian. Good to see you back to Earth.
Since we were both at Aspen, 8,000 feet high. Siva, want to respond to Eric Schmidt on the big picture there? Your blog, The Googleization of Everything, indicates you are concerned about Google getting too big.
Well, big isn't the fundamental problem. The fundamental problem, actually, there are a number of minor problems that are worth monitoring and worth worrying about. It doesn't necessarily mean that we should be ready to jump in to break it up AT&T style. By no means do I think we're anywhere near that situation. I'm mostly struck by the laughter that you generated with that question, right? I mean, the folks sitting there at the Aspen Ideas Festival thought that you had raised some absurd notion when, in fact, the question of whether Google should be regulated is not only a well thought out and hotly debated topic in the legal literature, but the fact is Google is regulated. The question, just like every business in America, every industry in the world, the question is whether it's regulated well enough and appropriately to function both in the interest of the market at large and the public interest. So, I mean, that's one of the most important things we have to remember here. Google is highly regulated by copyright, especially the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, highly regulated by network policy. The fact that we don't have strong enough safety for net neutrality actually works against Google's interests, and there's some regulation that we need to actually enhance Google's interest as well as the rest of ours. Privacy law, antitrust, these are all big areas of law that Google thinks about, deals with every day, which is why they have such a strong and growing presence in Washington. So it's not a deregulated industry. The question of whether Google's too big is another question. Google has 70% of the search market in the United States. That's not a red flag automatically for anybody who deals with antitrust, although in many Western European countries, their market share is over 90%, and I guarantee you they're going through a whole lot of scrutiny over there. Generally, when a company reaches 90% of a market, antitrust lights go off pretty strongly, which is why Microsoft's still under constant scrutiny, appropriately, I would add, for that kind of, the sort of misbehavior that can result from exercising power from that sort of market share. But, you know, look, the interesting thing here is that Schmidt says, trust us, we have good values. Well, that's not good enough, largely because Eric Schmidt is not immortal, and neither are the founders of Google, and this company is very likely to be around in 10 years, in 20 years, and very likely to be different.
So, Siva, are there any actual victims today, in your opinion, from the Googleization of everything, or is this just a hypothetical concern?
Oh, yeah, there are definitely victims, but at this point, our laws have not allowed them to seek adequate response to what they see as an arbitrary treatment by Google. And by that,
who are the victims? How are they being harmed?
Business owners who have found their position in searches downgraded significantly for reasons they can't explain. There have been a number of cases, at least three, in which business owners who have suffered real harm by seeing their ranks within Google downgraded have sought relief in court, and in every case, the court has basically said our laws are not set up to allow for this. Google has, in many cases, they've been able to argue a First Amendment right to be arbitrary and capricious with people's businesses. That is one of the major concerns and one of the reasons that law scholars such as Frank Pasquale at Seton Hall, Orrin Brock at University of Texas have proposed something like a federal search commission to at least establish basic standards and some sort of transparency in the industry, regardless of whether it's Google or Yahoo or Microsoft or anybody doing this sort of thing. There has to be some sort of well-known, well-understood standards because so many businesses rely on being able to be found on the internet. I mean, if we're moving toward that sort of information economy and that sort of search economy, then people's lives and livelihoods really depend on this sort of thing. So those are the most clear victims.
Jeff Jarvis, are you utterly unconcerned about any of this, or do you just think the market will keep Google in check, or what would you say to Siva?
I have a lot of faith in the market, Steve, and I agree that the issue isn't bigness. Indeed, I think Google isn't big enough. Google just this morning announced that it's bringing out a new operating system for computers, Chrome. Ironic, because that cuts Microsoft down to size most likely, and the market is taking care of Microsoft. And all the hoo-ha about Microsoft being too big, I think, was also wasteful.
But wait, the hoo-ha wasn't about Microsoft being too big. The problem was that Microsoft was being unfair in its practices. It's not about bigness, it's about what you do with the bigness.
Well,
it's
fair, about the harm. Fair is a very interesting word here because we hear that now out of newspapers and such, that it's just not fair that Google makes money.
No, that's not what I'm saying at all. In fact,
I
newspapers are completely
that, but
wrong.
One at a time. Actually, Siva, go ahead and clarify that point.
Yeah, I mean, newspapers are completely wrong. You and I completely agree with this. Newspapers don't understand their own business, let alone Google's business, and they're whining about Google somehow making money off the fact that they've been giving their content to Google is just absurd. That's not what we're talking about. The real harms that Microsoft was creating in the 90s involved muscling out competition, including competition for other operating systems. The reason it took so long for a company like Google to come up with an operating system that everyone agrees on day one is likely to compete heavily with Microsoft is that antitrust regulators have been able to keep Microsoft at bay. So Microsoft can't do the arm twisting it did with the hardware industry that it did in the 90s, which
I think Microsoft was not motivated to create an open cloud system the way Google is. Microsoft just simply looks at the world differently.
Well, regardless, Microsoft used its bullying material to squelch competition.
Jeff, what does that mean, an open cloud system?
Because the idea basically is the browser has become the operating system, that we use Google Docs. As you said at Aspen, you use Google Docs, you use the Reader, you use all these applications that are of the web. Your stuff is on the web. The stuff you're going to is on the web. The functionality is there. And so Chrome, as I understand it, is an extension of that that brings it to take over the machine that basically makes the web our operating system. Now, that opens up a lot of new opportunities. Look at all the opportunities that were opened up by Google and, for that matter, the Apple iPhone for application developers to develop new apps. So what this really does is open up for tons of people to compete with Microsoft on their application by using the web as the OS. We've been talking about this for years, but we're kind of finally there. Siva and I agree also about, I think, Siva, you're right to pinpoint that Google's weakness in this is that merchant who inexplicably gets affected by search. And, you know, in one hand, Google argues that, well, no, we run an auction, so it's not up to us. But Google still does, is the one area where Google has the ability to single-handedly cut off a merchant. And the reason they usually do that, the cases we've seen, is because they think someone's being a spammer. And we all want them to get rid of spammers. Some people came along and said, no, that's my business, it's legitimate, and there's a fight there. I don't really want to see a high-level commission put in by government, which is a form of regulation, but I do think Google would be smart, I blogged this a while ago, to create a jury of peers among its users who could judge, because it's all in our interest not to have the internet ruined by the bozos. It's in Google's interest and our interest, and right now Google taking that on alone puts them in this vulnerable position. So there we agree.
Yeah, Google's also in a position not only with how it treats search results, but how it deals with its advertising clientele. And the real problem where bigness might come out, and this requires long-term examination. Unfortunately, it looks like the FTC is getting in on it. The notion of the extent to which Google's market power affects the overall advertising market on the web. That's
money. There, that's just because Google came along and no longer held advertisers by the shorts, and instead sold performance. They changed the economics to sell performance instead of scarcity. They found all these ways to serve us users and all these ways so that they have us there in a targeted way. Google was just simply smarter than the entirety of the media industry, and on merit has gained this position. But there's nothing they're doing that stops anyone else from coming in and also competing, and competing in other areas like social and live and local.
Oh, actually, there is, and that is infrastructure. See, Google is not just a collection of code and smart people. Google has a tremendous and expensive infrastructure that has taken 10 years to build, and it's been able to build because of its great cash surplus. So its victory, its brilliance in generating revenue through advertising is what's subsidizing the rapid expansion of its infrastructure, which is at the point that only Microsoft can compete at that level for infrastructure, and Microsoft doesn't actually work in that business because that's not how it makes money. Now, as Google challenges Microsoft in its core business, Microsoft might have finally have the real incentive to move over and compete in terms of web advertising. But right now, because Google has such a dominant network effect over users and thus the audience for advertising, it's very unlikely that even Microsoft can push in on that.
But Steve, I don't think it's always about the Japanese monster movie, The Big versus the Big. I'm working on a project on new business models for news at CUNY, and so I'm looking at metro-wide, what follows the newspaper. And Google is making inroads into local, but there are huge opportunities to serve people locally on top of or apart from Google. Eric Schmidt has said that Google will soon make more money from mobile than it makes from the web, but it hasn't been there yet. Android hasn't succeeded yet. There are other opportunities for others, not including Microsoft, but startups come in that don't necessarily depend upon that infrastructure to build new success.
Well, if we're talking about Google and the hyperlocal, what about Google and the global? With Google's dominance in search, Google is apparently talking to China about making some kind of deal, Jeff, where they would actually have a block function. So
and
Google
I've objected to that at every turn.
Google would enable Chinese government censorship.
Horribly wrong. It's as wrong as Nokia and Siemens selling blocking technology for mobile to Iran. We should hold Google to a high standard here. We should give all these companies the cover to say, this is like apartheid. This is digital apartheid, and we've got to object to it.
Yeah, I actually disagree with Jeff on this, and I think you might be surprised because we had a fun time doing a public debate about questions like this. I've looked extensively at the way Google's behaving in China, and Google has essentially two faces in China. It has the servers that are based in China that run the Google.cn web search and web search only within China, and that in every case is at the subject to complete manipulation by the government of the People's Republic of China. It also allows, as much as the Chinese government will allow, access to the rest of Google, the Google that we get to experience, the Google.com and Gmail and everything else that Google offers. But of course, China has three major choke points on the internet and thus blocks out much of that often, including YouTube, right? So Google knows not to put servers in China that could result in the connection of use to a person who might have to go to jail. They don't want to subject anyone to punishment. But they also understand that not being in China is basically committing some sort of corporate suicide or at least malpractice. I mean, not being in China and having a company like Google is just plain dumb. So they have to be in China. And so the way I've looked at it is Google actually has done as well as one could expect in a situation like that. The other thing to remember is that censorship within China. Censorship within China is so pervasive and at every level that the search engine actually matters very little in that whole thing. It's really about the level of surveillance of the government.
Yeah, you really changed roles on this one. Jeff?
But I think this is more than more. I mean, Steve and I agree an awful lot, surprisingly. But I think there's another factor here, which is basically PR. It's standing up publicly in defense of free speech. No company depends on free speech and free information in this world more than Google. And I think they have more power and clout than even they know from their heights. Look at the delay of Green Dam, and we can't, ever guess the full motives of the Chinese government, but the software that was supposed to go on every PC by now to let the government block porn and anything else they considered bad, was delayed because there was an outcry. There was an outcry for economic reasons from PC manufacturers, but there was also an outcry from governments.
Yeah,
and I mean, think we have to stand up for free speech more in all ways, and we have to hold these companies like Google and Cisco and Nokia and Siemens to that standard.
Well, the real challenge there was Lenovo, which is a Chinese company that was going to be under severe stress in that. So, I mean, China had real short-term economic reasons to delay the installation of all this security software, which, by the way, the United States government supports domestically, right? The U.S. government actually totally supports web filters on our computers, especially in our libraries and schools,
and
even though they
doing
don't
the
work.
Same thing, and it's
and yet, and yet opposes them in China. So, largely, you know, for short-term interests, as I said. So, look, so, there's no place in the world that censorship doesn't occur. It's just a matter of scale.
All right.
And the fact is, all of this talk about corporate responsibility is empty talk. Corporate responsibility only is part of our lives in the absence of effective government policy. And because for the last 30 years, we have basically retreated from any sense of public responsibility by public institutions, we're stuck with companies proclaiming corporate responsibility as the way to live a better life. Mm-hmm. And that's it's sad and it's unfortunate. It's actually a major argument in my book.
We are just about out of time, but I just want to get a quick prediction from each of you. Where will we be in 5 years toward, you know, on the road to the Googleization of everything, and what will it mean? Siva, give me under a minute.
Oh, wow. You know, I'm so bad at predictions. I'd be a very rich person if I were. But, I see no reason that Google does such a good job in so many of its different areas. I see no reason why it would not continue its growth and reach something close to 90% of the search market in the United States. I do think that Google's going to be in big trouble with its book search program, which is, a big antitrust problem. It's basically price fixing in a particular segment of the book industry. So, Google is going to run into trouble in Washington consistently. They're just lucky that the president happens to be one of their best friends.
Jeff Jarvis, same question.
I think that we're going to see more and more that as old industries fall apart, this is another discussion with Schmidt at Aspen, that new ones are going to be built on platforms and built for much less, and Google is going to be a primary platform for the growth of the economy in the U.S. and around the world. And they'll do it in ways that inevitably surprise us. They could mess up. They could, in fact, the worst thing they could do, and they know this, is to use our information in bad ways, and we do have places where we can desert them, and it could hurt them. And so the don't be evil motto that they have really is a way to try to have their own employees keep them on the straight and narrow, because the worst thing they could do is to be evil.
Jeff Jarvis from the CUNY Graduate School of Journalism and BuzzMachine.com, author of the book What Would Google Do?, and Siva Vaidyanathan from the University of Virginia, writing a blog called The Googleization of Everything, How One Company is Disrupting Culture, Commerce, and Community, and Why We Should Worry. Is that also the title of the forthcoming book?
That's right.
We will have you on for that. Jeff and
Appreciate
Siva, thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Remember that guy who was hired to bust up Microsoft? What was that lawyer's name? Oh, it was Joel Klein. That's right. He's now the New York City Schools Chancellor. And we will talk about his arts policy coming up later in the hour. Also about hunger in America making a resurgence. Stay with us.